The Rav said that we have to accept who we are and the point that we're holding at now. So if I have an anger problem, then I cannot solve that problem without a Kaddish Baruch Hu's help. Right? And I have to accept that and be content with that and know that that's where I'm holding. And without a Kaddish Baruch Hu, and it's like an addict, and if a Kaddish Baruch Hu doesn't help me to move to the next step and to grow, I can't do it by myself.
Okay.
Am I accurate so far?
Yeah. The only thing I'm a bit concerned with is the word content.
I say content, I'm content with who I am.
I'm upset with the fact that that's what it is. Right. I don't want to make any judgments. Acceptance requires no judgment. You know?
I'm not going to be down on myself because I haven't yet corrected this.
No.
That's who I am. This is how I was created. This is the way it is.
That's reality. It's not good or bad. It's just that's what it is.
Okay.
Yes. So that was the only reason I was thinking.
Yesterday, I was able to be Kovish Me'etzahara, and I didn't get angry when normally I would have. That was a nace from Hashem, and I have to celebrate that nace.
Yeah.
Today, it's going to come a point where I'm going to be tested again, and it could be that today, Hashem won't make that miracle for me, and I'm going to slip back to where I was, and I'm going to get angry.
You're not going to slip back to where you were. You're going to be where you
were.
Yesterday, you slipped out of where you were.
Uh-huh, okay.
But now you're just back. You're back to where you always were. That's where you are.
So
you're
there's back no nace today. I'm back in real, and yeah. I'm going to get angry. There's nothing I can do about it. I'm going to get angry.
Pashtus, yeah.
Where's the Bechira?
Oh, excellent question. So when there's acceptance of real, then there can be Bechira. You can't have Bechira without acceptance. And you can't have acceptance without being in the moment.
But okay, so I'm at the point now, something's just triggered me. My kid's just done something, he's pushed my button, and I'm ready to fly off the handle.
Correct. And you know that that's a well-oiled, well-worn path.
I can feel it. My brain is telling me, don't do it, but I'm doing it.
Yeah. So let's use the word for predictability. When it's unpredictable, then you're in the world of Nais and Bechira. Predictable is out of the world of Bechira and Nais. Predictable is predictable.
So the Rav is saying is that at that point, when my kid pushes that button, and I know I'm about to fly off the handle, and I'm going to fly off the handle, I can say, fly off the handle.
I never said that.
No, I'm asking.
I don't understand that.
So where's the Bechira?
Well, stop? Well, why don't you stop flying off the handle?
Because that's who I am and that's where I'm holding. And Hashem hasn't made the miracle for me now, so I'm going to fly off the handle.
Oh, so then it's not your choice whether you're going to fly off the handle or not. It's not you sitting there saying, well, I don't want to fly off the handle and I'm going to stop myself flying off the handle, but the rabbi said I'm allowed to fly off the handle. That's not what happens in real life. What happens in real life is I fly off the handle. If I ask you afterwards, why did you do that? You go, well, because that's what I do. That's me. If you're catching yourself in the moment, saying, do I want to fly off the handle now or not? So then maybe you should start making some choices. To not fly off the handle.
I guess it's more, I think you've started to fly off the handle, and you realize you're flying off the handle like you always fly off the handle.
So now, do you have the ability to make a choice not to fly off the handle?
Right.
If you have that ability, fine. So then you better start making some choices.
Then you have a Bechira decision.
Then you have a Bechira decision. Now make a Bechira decision.
We don't know when we do and when we don't.
You can get in touch with it. You can get in touch with your Bechira. The Bechira is when you're functioning unpredictably. If it's predictable, in other words, if you look back on the event, right, was what happened 100%
right.
predictable?
Right.
Fine, so there's no Bechira there at all. There's no Bechira.
There's no Bechira to stop it.
There's no Bechira. No, I'm saying
at that
post,
moment, there was no.
No, I'm saying post the event when you look back.
Right, we're saying there was.
Was what happened predictable? Was that something? If you plugged in the computer would have spat out exactly, and you responded exactly the way you always have, and you always will, without any intervention. Yeah, so there was no Bechira there.
So the only way then to work on oneself is basically to doubt.
Well, no, it's not the only way. You have to work on acceptance. You have to work on being in the moment and accepting who you are now, accepting what is now.
Once you've reached acceptance,
you'll recognize, and you've been celebrating those little miracles that have been happening along the way, you'll recognize a place where you'll want to start making choices about this particular problem that you have. For example, a very crude example. You have the alcoholic, right? And he's drinking and drinking and drinking, and he's reached a healthy place of acceptance, yeah? Healthy, I'm serious. Healthy, like real good, healthy acceptance. He knows that, like, this is me. This is what's going to be going on, right? So now you say to him, listen, you know that if you carry on drinking, you're going to lose your liver, you're going to die. You're not going to make your kid's wedding. Like, is this the way you want to carry on? So the guy said, no, it's not what I want to carry on, but this is me. So now he has to stop making choices. If he's really reached the level of acceptance, he can make choices. He can go live in Saudi Arabia. where you can't buy booze. So he can decide to go to a rehab center and start working the process of rehab. He can maybe go for counseling. He can. There are a lot of choices he can make once he's accepted the fact that he's out of control.
But if he accepts the fact that he's out of control and that everything he's ever tried before has not worked, why would this choice be any different?
Well, going to live in Saudi Arabia would work. Because he has no access to alcohol, so he's going to stop drinking.
Right.
Fine, so maybe that's what he has to do. The Gemara, describes a case very similar to this, where somebody had a problem with his eyes, and he poked at his eyes. So Hashem came to him and said, hey, what are you doing? That's not what I created the world for you to poke at your eyes. I'm giving you back your sight. He said, well, I'll poke them out again. I don't want to look at what I don't want to look at. I don't want to look at things I'm not allowed to look at. And the only thing I can do is poke out my eyes. The only thing I can do is go live in Saudi Arabia. I don't want you to live in Saudi Arabia. Fine, so I'm going to take away, I'm going to give you back your sight. So he says, well, I'll poke my eyes out again. So eventually Hashem says, okay, I'll give you back your sight and I'll take away the tava. That's exactly what we're asking Hashem to do. I accept the fact there's nothing I can do about looking where I don't want to look. So I poke out my eyes. Obviously no one here should take this literally. You shouldn't poke out your eyes. Got it? Don't poke out your eyes. But there are ways of poking out your eyes without poking out your eyes. You know, live in Beit Shemesh. Break your glasses. I don't know, whatever. You know, go live in Saudi Arabia. So yeah, those are choices that we can make. And those choices we have to make. That's who you really are. What choices are you going to make now that you've reached a healthy level of acceptance?
But the choice still has to have the overriding assumption that in the end of the day, without
you help, need a miracle. Well,
without Hashem's help, even with the choices, it's not going
to
work.
So you have to daven, yeah. Yeah. The first five shiurim in this series really should be Hilchos Tefillah. It'll really be on Hilchos Tefillah. Every shiur you ever give a shiur on chinuch. So you have to tell the guys to daven. You know. But the Gemara says haval halo sagi. Just davening is not enough, and just making ishtadlus is not enough. You need both. You need tefillah, but you need healthy ishtadlus. Otherwise, really, what you're saying is that Kol Yisrael should just look like a bunch of guys sitting at the kosher the whole day davening and not doing anything else. Same as panasa.
But the choice. What I'm saying is the
panasa requires panasa. You realize not. You've got nothing to do with panasa. The person realizes that come on, let's be real. If you look at it, panasa, what's panasa got to do with me? It's a miracle, right? So you know you have to daven chinuch. If you think you can protect and save your children from all the things out there that are gonna, you know, wreck their lives, okay? If you think you can protect them, so you're an idiot.
I'm smiling.
So you understand? You have to daven. You understand? You have to daven. But you have to make ishtadlus. Hashem wants us. He wants our active participation in His dream. So we have to get out there. We have to make ishtadlus.
Smiling because I was just listening yesterday to Rav Shushan David Pinkus, and he talks exactly about being a shutta with Hashem, and he asks exactly the question: do we not take a part? We don't. It's all a miracle. He says, not really.
Not really.
He says, not really.
Not really. You got to go out there and do your thing.
And he says, in that way, he brings a raya from when you if you're passing something from Shusha Rabin to Shusha Yachid, if two people are doing it and neither one can do it on their own, then they're shutafim. Then the halacha is they're over, right? They're over.
Chutzah.
So that's the relationship. That's being shutav with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. That Hashem created this world in such a way that you cannot make parnasa by yourself, and kibyachol Hashem cannot give you parnasa without your participation.
Yep. Okay. There are lots of different ways of looking at this. Lots of different ways. You see, I'll give an example. I spoke about this often in the afternoon class. This is a halacha lo samel adam reicha. You're walking down the road and you see a guy drowning in the river. Now, if this guy's going to drown in the river, he's going to drown in the river. There's nothing anybody going to do to stop it. The Gezeirin Shemaim, when this guy was born, that he was going to die at this age, on this day, in this place, by drowning or whatever, you can bring 5,000 lifesavers. This guy's going to drown. There's nothing going to stop it, right? But you have a chiv to jump in there and try and save him. You jumped in, you tried to save him, whatever, he drowned. Fine. You did everything you had to do. You're fine. He drowned, and malasot. What happens if you decided not to jump in and save him? Say you drowned. Now you're a murderer. The Torah considers it as if you killed him. Oh, one second. What's it got to do with me? Even if I jumped in and tried to save him, he would have drowned. So what do you want from me? I didn't do anything. And even if I'd done something, I didn't do anything. So basically, you have parallel lines, you're touching, which is an impossibility. You get it? Lo Samar Adam Recha says, you've got to do what you've got to do. After you've done what you've got to do, what happens after has nothing to do with you. That's up to Hashem. But in there's two worlds here. There's like two dynamics taking place which really shouldn't touch each other because they have nothing to do with each other. My jumping into the river has got nothing to do with this guy drowning or not. And yet you see how Kodesh Baruch Hu connects those two events. So it's the same with everything else. My panos and my ishtadlis has nothing to do with my ishtadlis. I can work 27 hours a day and Hashem's going to give me what he decided to give in Rosh Hashanah. You have to know that. You cannot change your panos. And yet there's a tanai in panos. If you don't make ishtadlis, you're not going to get it. So there's a parallel lines that touch. How did that happen? Okay, that Kodesh Baruch Hu runs a world like that. Why does he want us to do what he's doing? So that he has in Emunah B'Tochen of Tav, a whole chapter on two questions. Because your question even gets further. Hishtadlis, you understand. Right? Hishtadlis is like is it a game? It's some kind of, it's a tanai in the bracha that you have to make hishtadlis. So really what you're doing with hishtadlis is a mitzvah b'fnei atzmei. You have to understand. My gonna work has nothing to do with panasa. Any more than my putting on tefillin has to do with panasa. Any more than my eating matzah has to do with panasa. There's a mitzvah b'fnei atzmei of being makadosh shem shamayim. There's a mitzvah. Every Jew, that's what we're in this world to do. That's really what we're here for. To be makadosh shem shamayim. So where are you going to be makadosh shem shamayim? So Kodesh Baruch Hu sets up events and circumstances that are going to make you be makadosh shem shamayim in certain areas where you wouldn't have thought to go before. For example, refuah. You think the dentist's going to help your toothache? The dentist can't help your toothache. Hashem's gave you the toothache, he'll take the toothache away. So what have to go to the dentist for? Because Hashem wants you to be makadosh shem shamayim, the dentist. Yeah? He gives a wonderful example. Let's say you're about to sign the deal of your life, right? You're sitting around the table with the Microsoft guys, they're small fish today, with the Facebook guys, yeah? And you're just about to sign a $500 million contract with the Facebook guys, right? That's Panasa, that's Ishtadlis for Panasa, right? So now you're being Makadosh Shem Shemayim in the Facebook boardroom with all the big machas there and the lawyers and everything, and suddenly you're just about to put pen to paper, you get a toothache that mama takes your head off your shoulders and you have to go to the dentist now. So the deal's off and you go down the road and you go to the dentist. Now you're sitting in the dentist's waiting room. So how do we look at that? Chaval, I was about to sign the deal of my life and I got this toothache and I don't know if I'll ever get this deal back together again. I don't know what's going to be here. Lord, what's Hashem doing? The person who's got correct Tashkofi glasses on understands exactly what's going on here. I was being Makadosh Shem Shemayim in the boardroom at Facebook. It had nothing to do with $500 million deals. It had nothing to do with my panasa. As the toothache started, so the mitzvah of being Makadosh Shem Shemayim in the Facebook ballroom ended, and the mitzvah of being Makadosh Shem Shemayim in the dentist's waiting room started. That's all. I just went from Facebook to dentist. A Bali Mun, a Baal B'Tochen, who's really holding, understands that nothing changed here. Nothing changed. My panos is not affected by the toothache. My toothache's not affected by the dentist. I just had to be Makadosh Shem Shemayim there. Not Hashem doesn't need me to be Makadosh Shem Shemayim anymore. He sent me there to be Makadosh Shem Shemayim. That's all Ishtadlis is. It's a mitzvah of being Makadosh Shem Shemayim. Reb Chaim Kanievsky is zoche to sit in his house or sit in the Beis Midrash and learn Yom Avalayla, and he's Makadosh Shem Shemayim there. Have you ever been to visit him? The whole world comes to him. What's the whole world coming to him for? He sits and learns Torah. He's Makadosh Shem Shemayim. The biggest businessmen, statesmen, politicians, they all come and ask him advice. There's a bigger Kiddush Hashem than that. So there's certain people Hashem lets you sit and learn the whole day and be Makadosh Shem Shemayim there. Other people have to go and work. Other people have to this. Other people have to that. Other people have to be dentists. Whatever it is, being Makadosh Shem Shemayim in whoever Kodesh Baruch Hu kind of steers you in your derech. So you understand that Ishtadlis has nothing to do with Panasa. Panasa, Hashem's going to pay you whatever you need to get paid. Ishtadlis, you have to choose where you're going to be Makadosh Shem Shemayim. And Hashem helps you make those choices. If you've got $1 million in the bank and you need to work, so go sit and learn. You'll be Makadosh Shem Shemayim in the Beis Midrash. Suddenly you realize, hey, wait a minute, my wife refuses to go to the Makolet because I haven't paid the Makolet bill. It could be that a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants you to be Makadosh Shem Shemayim, selling newspapers or something. I don't know, whatever. Fine, whatever. Okay, then now how do you know what Ishtadlis to make? That's another discussion. So the question's even bigger, though, you're saying to me now, once you've accepted all this Emun and B'Tochen and Eid and B'Vod and it's all from Hashem, etc., etc., and even your own midas and your own life changes that you need to get over with all Hashem, then you need to daven, right? So now I've got a bigger kasha on you. Well, what am I davening for? Where does davening fit into all of this? If a person's not supposed to have children, he can daven day in and day out. He can beat the Shara Shemaim. If a Kodesh Baruch Hu is not good for you, he's not going to give you children. Same with panasa, the same with chinuch, the same with anything else. If what's supposed to be, how is your davening going to change that?
Because davening can change you.
That's a nice answer. Yeah, that's an answer that they give, that the davening changes you. But it's not so posh. It's how you daven for somebody else. That's another kasha. I change myself all day. How's it going to help your panasa? I'm davening for you to have panasa. So good. So I make myself different. So I'm a different person. So how do you get someone else different? How do you change your situation? It's not so positive. So davening is even a bigger kasha. Davening is much harder to understand than ishtadlis. Ishtadlis, understand. Kosh Baruch Hu wants Yidden out there doing business honestly and being Makar Hashem Shemayim. He wants people say, "Psh, that guy, Mamash, he's 100% reliable and withstanding the nisoyness of doing business straight and alpi alocha and avoiding ribis, avoiding sheke and all the multiple lochas of business, whatever." Fine, that's a wonderful place to be. A second omel in Torah and in mitzvahs is in business. What greater place? It was the sheikh that came to Rizal Salanti. He wanted to stop in the sheikh. It was just too hot. The halachas and the Yerushalayim. He was terrified. Made a mistake. You know, the surim. He decided he's going to business. So Rizal Salanti said, "Fine. It's the same as you went into being a sheikh. You learned Hilchus Shechita. You go into business. You have to learn Hilchus business." So he gave him the simanim Shulchan Aruch. He had to learn or whatever. The guy came back 6 months later and said, "I'm going to be a sheikh." He's talking about, have you learned a bit of, just Hilchus Shechinim, you have a next door neighbor. You got the first two prokim Baba Basri. You got those clear yet? With Shulchan Aruch, come on. So wherever you're dealing, wherever you're hunting, wherever you're managing, wherever you're functioning, so then you have to be Makadosh Shem Shemayim. Tefillah is a much harder sugi to understand, and he has a whole chapter as well with Tauba. He has a very, very, very mechudosh dika mahalach in why we have to daven, and how that brings shefa into the world and whatever. That's a big subject. But in Achinami, once you believe the Gemara that says that im Hashem lo ozer lo yuchel, if Hashem won't help you, you can't. Then you have to go to Hashem and ask him for help. No question. And that's why those moments of unpredictability have to be grabbed as moments of relationship with Hashem. You see, the original guy we spoke about right in the beginning, the guy who's in denial, when he doesn't drink or smoke or whatever it is that he's trying to stop doing, he doesn't see Hashem in his life there. Because he just thought it was him. I can do this. So when he did it, there's no surprise. For him, there's no surprise there. So then there's no Hashem. Where does he connect to Hashem in that moment? Whereas a guy who knows he can't manage, and suddenly sees he manages, so then he understands. The Gemara said, "Lo yuchol." And I was yuchol. So how did that happen? Well, so that's a moment of incredible intimate connection with Hashem. You just connected the most intimate way with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. You just saw Hashem coming into your life and mamash, hands on, dealing with your life. I mean, how closer do you want to get to Hashem than that? So if you recognize you can't, and you see that you did, you get a surprise. It's unpredictable. The minute it's unpredictable, that's a surprise, right? So then you recognize, hey, that was a bit of Gilush Chin in my life. And you celebrate that, and you realize how much Hashem's involved in your life. So then now make another choice. Fine, celebrate, I'm back. I never get out of acceptance mode, but I'm a lot more alert to the, hey, wait, now you really, Hashem, that was amazing, help me more, and daven, and eventually, if you poke out your eyes enough times, Hashem takes the problem away and gives you back your eyes. That's what the Gemara is telling you. But you need such a strong level of acceptance. Rebecca once told me a Moridika story. I still don't know who the person was. I don't know who the person is. I'll ask you, Taka. He just made a shidduch of one of his daughters after she mazel tov. If I remember, I'll ask him. Every time I see him, I forget to ask him what it was. He told me the following maaser. Reb Shlomo Shodron told the story to Reb Shlomo Zalman. That's how the story got out. There was a certain tzaddik in Yerushalayim, apparently a very well-known tzaddik, who was mamish. Everyone loved him. He was the most lovable, nice, sweet man. The kids loved him. Everybody loved him. And Reb Shlomo used to have a chavrusa with him every afternoon in his apartment. And they used to sit and learn in the apartment. One day they were sitting and learning. And this dwarf turned around to Reb Shlomo and said, "The kids downstairs are making a noise. They're disturbing me. Wouldn't you mind just asking them to go be quiet?" So Reb Shlomo was mama shocked. First of all, the kids disturbing you. We've been learning every day. The kids don't disturb you. And number two, why did you stick your head out the window? Tell them to keep quiet. I've got to go downstairs and tell them to keep quiet. Whatever. He was a bit shocked by the whole event. Didn't make that much sense to me. He went downstairs and he told him to be quiet. He came back and afterwards, the Rav was very apologetic to Reb Shlomo. He said, "I'm very sorry that I asked you to go downstairs or whatever." He said, "But I didn't want to go down and tell him to keep quiet because I don't want to get angry. So Reb Shlomo was like shocked. "You get angry? This is the tzaddik of Yerushalayim. The guy's never. This is the most lovable. We walked down the street. Kids used to run after him. You don't understand what's going on. I'm shocked." So he went to Reb Shlomo Zalman. He said, "Explain to me what's going on here." Their brother-in-law, Reb Shlomo Zalman, was Reb Shlomo Shodron's brother-in-law. So Reb Shlomo Zalman said, "I always knew he was a big tzaddik, but until now I didn't realize how big a tzaddik he really is." He says, we grew up together in Shari Chesed, him and me. And as a kid, this guy had a real anger problem. This guy, Mamash, had a real, real serious anger problem. But he worked on himself and whatever, and he got to the point where he is who he is today. You see, whatever. He said, but his godless is, and he never forgot that he's an anger addict. He never forgot that he has a problem with anger. He went, don't go downstairs and tell the kids to keep quiet. You know why? Don't trust yourself until you die. You know that you have an anger problem. You haven't got angry in 20 years. You haven't felt irritation for 30 years. Doesn't matter. If you know that that was your issue, you worked through your youth battling and struggling and grappling with anger, so don't get into situations. Choices. Make choices to avoid situations that get you angry. For example, you know that your kid always pushes that button, or your wife pushes that button, or whatever. Don't get into situations. Don't get into situations. I'll give an example. You know that bedtime, getting the kid to bed by 7 o'clock, that's usually where the fight starts. So you've accepted you're an anger addict. You know that if you're going to go into that boxing ring, there's going to be a fight. So don't get into the ring. Don't get into the ring. The kid will go to sleep half an hour later. Make a choice. What's better? What's better for the kid? That he gets half an hour less sleep, or that he sees me blowing my lid? Make a choice. So fine. So I'm not going to kill him to get to bed on time. I have it in the morning. The night time's not bothering me that much, but unless I've got something very holy to do, you know. You know that holy Yetzer Hara, horror.
And
you
that's
know?
When they act up.
Of course, because they think Hashem doesn't know that you're being holy. Oh, of course, of course. But the night time's been a lesson for the mornings are a big problem for me, because I like to get yeshiva on time so that I can kick back to the guys that come late, you see. So that's usually where I flip it. And also choices. You have to make choices. Am I going to scream the kids out of the house, or am I going to be a few minutes late and the kids will go to school nicely? It's a choice. That, you see where Bechira comes in? If you don't accept the anger, then you're not going to be making a Bechira decision.
So are we saying that as long as we accept the anger, I'm holding this point, I would always be holding at this point, and anything from now to 30 years later, he hasn't been angry in 30 years, is it still an ace when he doesn't get angry? It's still an ace.
You celebrate the ace.
You never leave that.
You never leave a moment of acceptance.
No, but I mean, you never really grow then. It's always missing.
No, your choices. You've made he made a choice not to go downstairs.
I realize, but the reason he made that choice is because of his acceptance.
Because of acceptance. If he didn't have acceptance, then he would have gone downstairs.
Which
who knows what
he's still
happened.
Holding in the same place he was 30 years ago. He just now avoids the situation. And he celebrates the fact that every time I don't get angry, it's a nes from a Kadosh Baruch Hu.
He says hallel, yeah.
And there I say hallel. Yeah. And I don't put myself in that situation because I know I'm still holding where I was 30 years ago.
Yeah, but eventually Kadosh Baruch Hu takes away the midah.
And that's growth.
The
growth is also then from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's not internal growth. I'm not growing. I am being made to grow.
I'm making choices. No, I'm making choices based on the reality of who I am.
Right.
The same way as a guy who can't stand the sight of blood. He accepts the fact he can't stand the sight of blood, and he chooses not to be a doctor. He doesn't, you know, regret and hate himself for the fact that he can't stand the sight of blood, and he really wants to be a doctor. And he goes and bees a doctor, and every time he starts working on surgery, he faints. You know, I mean, so make a choice. Stop being a doctor.
Becomes an endocrinologist.
Yeah. Stop being a. You know, come on. Stop. You know, don't become a sheikh if you can't stand being around bleeding animals. You know, so then make a choice. You grow from the choices. The truth of the matter is, you actually grow more from the acceptance than anything else. What do you really grow from?
The Rav just defined the growth as being Hashem takes away the taiva.
Eventually, after you've made choices and you've celebrated and you've done the avodah, then eventually Kosh Baruch Hu takes away. The Gemara says, "Eini yochel." You're right. Eini yochel,
but Eini yochel means I'll never be yochel.
No, but you have to take out a Mesidus Yishon. You have to learn the sugyas, right. And you have to get to understand anger, and you have to learn the sugya. The person's got a problem with theft. There's nothing better than learning Hilchos Gneiva as an antidote for that. You have to make these ishtadlises you can make, but at the end of the day, you always have to go back to Eini yochel.
And the shtadlis are basically to keep myself out of situations which will trigger.
In the beginning, yeah. Listen, it's hard for me to project too far down the line because I know where it's going to go with
you. But this example with the tzaddik was 30 years later. He was still not putting himself in a situation where he might get angry.
Correct. Because of the terror of getting angry, he didn't trust himself. He was
exactly. So
he was understanding the chazal that says lo yuchel. Right. He was understanding the chazal that says al tismoch al atzmach al yom moisei. And he was making choices, real bechira decisions, okay? Not to put himself into the boxing ring with his biggest enemy.
That's the Bechira.
That's godless. That's Bechira.
That's the Bechira. The Bechira is not I'm not going to get this. Angry. The Bechira is I'm not going to put myself in a situation which is going to trigger my anger because I can't. That's the Bechira.
That's the Gemara. The Gemara says that Mefurish of Tetz has a whole share on this. Is the Gemara says a guy comes to a fork in the road. The one path takes him home safely with no obstacles, no nisoinus, no growth, nothing. Just walk home, get home. Nothing happened. Uneventful. The other path takes him past the river where the women are washing the clothes. So he decides to go down that path, and he doesn't look. So and he closes his eyes and he turns his head away, and then he gets home. Gemara says he's a Rosha. So 1 second, I understand. What did he do wrong? He didn't do anything wrong. At the point of Bechira, the way we would look at it, in the Havamina, the point of Bechira, he used his Bechira correctly and he didn't look. So explain them a foreshift, that wasn't where the Bechira was. The Bechira, the fork in the road. He's a Rosha because at the fork in the road, he used his Bechira incorrectly. Go home the safe way. No fanfare, you know, you're not going to get any medals when you get home because nothing happened. You're right. You're missing where the Bechira is taking place. You'd think at the crossroads there's a decision to, well, there's no real decision here. When I get there, then I'll have a battle with my Yetzirah and I'll win. Putting yourself into the ring with the Yetzirah is a Rosh. That's what's called a Rosh. You don't get into the ring with the Yetzirah. So where's the Ikka Bechira? The Ikka Bechira is avoiding the struggle with the Yetzirah. Had a Mashgiach, he once said to me, he said, I mean, those days television was the war. He said, if I had a television in my house, I wouldn't get punished for watching television. Because I couldn't help it. Once you've got a television in your house, you've got no more Bechira whether you're going to watch or not. You've got Bechira, you're going to watch. So for watching, you're not going to get clapped. You're going to get clapped. Why did you bring it into your house in the first place? You're not allowed to get into the ring. So that's what the Yetzirah tools to fool you. The Yetzirah wants you to think that the Ikka Bechira is once you're in the ring with him, how are you going to deal with it? And Chazal tell you that the Ikka Melchoma with the Yetzirah is not to get into the ring. You see, a guy who's out of acceptance says, you know what, I'll go downstairs and I won't get angry. I want to go downstairs and I want to build some muscle. I'm going to go downstairs and I'm not going to get angry. The tzaddik says, hey, who says I should get into the ring? I'll choose to stay upstairs. And I'll send somebody else to tell the kids to keep quiet and I won't get angry. That's the switch that needs to take place. And that only comes in the back of acceptance. If there's hints of denial inside of yourself, you're going to go downstairs. And there'll be times the Yetzirah will let you win. You must know the Yetzirah lets you win very often. Mm. He'll give you the small, he'll give you the bone, because he's waiting for you around the corner with a bigger club. Yeah. That's a Gemara. It says that the dogs of Rome are mefanes b'chochma. The Gemara says that the dogs in Rome acquire their livelihood with chochma. What do? They wait for the baker in the morning to put out his wares in the market. And it's very early. The bakers get up very early to bake the bread and whatever. And then they see the dogs walking around, so they don't rest because they've got to guard their wares. So the dog pretends to lie down and go to sleep. The baker sees the dog sleeping. Oh yeah, I've got to stop. The baker sees the dog sleeping, and he goes to sleep. The dog comes and he knocks down all the bread all over the place. He takes one loaf and he runs away. So the Forshim ask, where's the Chochmah? Anyone can do that. That's not big Chochmah. And second, why does he have to knock over the guy's table to steal one loaf of bread? So the pshat is, I think Rav Sholom Shodron brings down this pshat. I think it's Rav Sholom's pshat in Kol Eli Doifek. So he says like this: the dogs of Rome are not interested only in feeding themselves today. The dogs of Rome has to be considered as panosa forever. So he can only do this trick once. Correct? Tomorrow the baker sees the dog going to sleep. He knows what happened yesterday. He's not going to let the guy get away with it. So what does he do? He knocks over the whole table and he runs away with one loaf. The baker thinks the dog came to get all my bread. And Baruch Hashem was matzlich. I only ran away with one loaf. So tomorrow when the dog comes back, the baker's not worried about the dog because I beat you yesterday and I'll beat you again today. And the dog's smiling because all he wanted was one loaf. And that's the Yetzirah. That's the marshal of the Yetzirah. The Yetzirah earns his panasa with enormous chochmah. He never came to a person and said, smoke a packet of cigarettes. Have one cigarette. One cigarette never killed anybody. Fine. Then he coughs and he coughs and he coughs and he goes to sleep coughing and coughing. That's it. He's never going to smoke again. He wakes up in the morning, he has a cigarette. Why? One cigarette never killed anybody. Desla says, one cigarette never killed anybody. So that's the Yetzirah. You thought the Yetzirah wanted you to smoke a whole packet and you only smoke half a packet today. An enormous success today. You cut back. The Yetzirah is very happy to let you carry on smoking until you kill yourself. Very happy. Only too happy. You should just carry on. Go to sleep. I'll just take my one loaf. And you think you're winning. The baker thinks he's winning. Every morning he's winning. He beat the dog again. Dog tried to get all my bread. You see, I only got away with one loaf. And the dog's ecstatic. He only came for one loaf. Fineness for Hoffman. Let's marshal for the Australian.